Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr., Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers for the Cincinnati Inquirer are here. We are separate but equal. You're on the other side of the Midwest right now. I'm still here in Cincinnati, wherever I may roam. January continues. Next week you'll be in Mobile.
Yeah.
Then the week after that I'll be in Houston at the Super Bowl, and you'll be back home. We're all over the place.
All over, yeah. It's that time of year. You know, and then we get to roll into when you start doing mock drafts. So, you know, it's look, all leading up to that.
You're right, because the combine is right around the corner.
Right.
And I know that you just want to see – I really kind of want to put one out now just to shut all you people up. Because I don't know why it has to be in the first minute of every podcast that you demand a mock draft. So maybe I will put one out. Okay. Well, I'd like to do one before free agency. Maybe I'll do it just because I'm sick of this.
Well, I think just because, you know, there's guys like Bud Dupree and other players that the Bengals, you know, quote unquote passed on, currently playing in the title games, that, you know, people want to know.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of crack me up when any time a player makes a play that was drafted near where the Bengals are, you end up, like, we hear about it.
Right.
On Twitter. Yeah. Like, oh, Bud Dupree? Could have had him? They could have really had almost everybody. I mean, outside of anybody that was in the first 20 picks that year, they could have had anybody but Cedric Ogbuehi.
Right.
That pick was a bust. I think we all can come to terms with that.
Yeah, that's why we need a way too early mock draft. Somehow tied.
Everyone has to. They're even in the headline admitting that right. It's unnecessary.
Right.
Way too early. Shouldn't do this mock draft.
Yeah.
You need to read this mock draft.
Hey, you know who who's making an impact for the Packers? Demarius Randall, number 30. Packers could have had, or Bengals could have had him.
Bengals could have had Demarius Randall. Absolutely. Yeah.
Nowhere to play him. But, you know, didn't have a need there. But they could have had him.
Fake news mock draft. So early it's completely unnecessary. It has no bearing on the actual draft, mock draft.
Right. Well, see, here's the thing. My predictions were so bad this year, I need to find something in the offseason to rally up.
Do you want to do this real quick? I have our season preview section right here.
I don't know if I want to do this at all.
Can you hear me opening it? The newspaper, the print newspaper. Some people listening might be familiar with it. We still
subscribe.
At that point in time, we printed it. I think as of today, we still do print it. So we both, it should be known, and I want to bring this up. We both in the Super Bowl have Packers over Patriots. Look at us.
Yeah, hey. I tell you, when the Packers were 4-6, I was real confident about that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. You had Packers or Patriots over Steelers in the AFC Championship
game. Hey, look at that.
I had Patriots over Chiefs, so that 2-point difference was the difference between how strong I was versus how strong you were.
Yeah, well, I was stronger, so that's
you were stronger.
You were stronger in that particular case, right? But we'll both be really strong if the Packers and the Patriots advance this weekend.
Do I even want to know who I had in that playing the Packers in the NFC title game?
Seahawks. So you were close.
Yeah, you know what? And I believe that too because I am not a Matt Ryan Falcons believer. This actually is going to kind of foreshadow my why I'm mad, but you know, really one call turned that entire game on its head. And
if you're going to complain,
oh yeah,
about the holding call on the Hester return,
yeah.
That was not a bad call. It's illegal. You can't drag a guy down.
Here's the thing. I'm not saying it was a incorrect call. I'm saying it was a poor decision to make it. And I think there's a difference.
A poor decision to make it to call a penalty?
Yeah.
Talk about a poor decision to make it. How about the holding call against James Harrison?
Wow.
How about the non-PI on Travis Kelce?
Yeah, there was a whole lot. Yeah, I can't really fight with Bengals fans on any of this. You know, who's at 28 for the Steelers, just totally decapitating another player. You know, they really specialize in headshots over there. They do.
They really do. They're very good at them.
They are. I can't really, you know. But anyway, what we're talking about is that particular play that ruined me having a perfect final championship weekend.
You were close. You were that close.
No, look, we can get into this a little bit later. We talked about this in the press box all year long. I think the league has done itself a disservice with how they want it officiated, what they put in these refs' minds. Look, it wasn't an incorrect call. Yes, it was holding. However, I don't know. I just think there's time.
You can't do it.
Yeah,
you can't do it.
You could throw that flag on every single play on the interior line. I think sometimes you just say, you know what? Eh, that's close. You know, they're tangled up on the line. Eh.
Look, if it wasn't that play, it was going to be another play. The Falcons destroyed the Seahawks. Their defense could not stop Matt Ryan.
Hey, look, there's a difference between 17-7.
That happened to be the delineation line between when it got out of hand for the Seahawks. At some point, it was going to get out of hand. The Falcons were clearly the better team.
There's a huge – come on, you know better than that. You know there's a huge difference in it being 17-7 because they would have scored a touchdown inside the 10. 17-7 versus – what was it, 10-9 and a total flip in, or 10-8, whatever it ended up being with the 5 points. And then the total flip in field position, I mean, it was such I watched the Packers blow an 18-point lead. You're right, I get it. Like, the Falcons were going to score some points, but I don't know. I think that the whole tenor of that first half changes. And it would have been, oh, here we go again for the Falcons.
When's the last time the Seahawks scored 36 points?
I don't know. I don't even know if the Falcons' offense gets going. I think everything changes in that particular. I think everything changes.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Bengals. Let's make people sad.
I picked them to go to the playoffs.
They're not. You know what? Here's one thing. I did this before the season. I did looking at common theme. The common theme statistic. What is the key statistic if you look at structure of teams, particularly offenses, when you figure out if they advance in the playoffs, what types of teams and types of offenses advance? And it proved what I found before this season. And this is not a secret, but it's a stat. It played itself out big time this weekend. I mean, you can almost always in this league just follow the quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah.
It's not hard. Yards per attempt, man.
Yeah.
Passing efficiency is the only stat. Excuse me. It's the only stat you really need to look at and anymore. When I went through before the season, you looked at the last 4 or 5 years that it was consistently the ranking of teams that advanced was like 5 points higher in that stat than any, you know, as far as correlation. You got to be in the top five, top 10 in yards per attempt in order to make it or be on a run like that. Aaron Rodgers isn't this year, but he has been during this run because he was so bad early in the year for no reason.
Yeah.
But during this run, he's been incredible. Yards per attempt, he's up in the top. Number one and two in the stat during the course of the season, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger was six.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this league – first of all, this league, you either have one of those guys or you don't. Look at the AFC.
Right.
Outside of the one Flacco blip, you know, since 2001, three quarterbacks have been in the AFC and Super Bowl reps in the AFC.
Yeah.
Who we're playing this weekend. And the NFC is similar. I mean, there's a reason it's guys like Rodgers that are there. And Matt Ryan was a yard better than anybody else this year in yards per attempt. He's having the kind of season this year that Andy Dalton was having last year.
Yeah.
And so it's hard not to – for me, it's hard not to look at the Falcons this year and not see the Bengals last year if Dalton doesn't get hurt. Do you see that? Did you make that correlation in your head at all? Or
– yeah, it's well, you know, they got the same guy catching passes out of the slot too, or on the outside. Yeah. You know, I think it's the right way to look at offense. And while the Bengals weren't particularly successful at it, I think that was one of the reasons Marvin Lewis wanted to stick with Ken Zampezi. I mean, they're in the similar mindset. You got to push the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you know.
But it's not necessarily about pushing the ball down.
Yeah, there's some catch and run aspect of that, too. I get it.
Finding ways to be effective, keep your interceptions down, but keep your yards per attempt up. That's something that Andy Dalton has been really good at the last 2 years. His interception rate has been low, and his yards per attempt has been, for the most part, high. It obviously came down the last portion of the season without A.J. Green there to help.
Right.
But, I mean – if you look at that, I mean, that's why people that complain about the McCarron-Dalton thing, we'll get into that because we're going to go into our
ways
to fix themselves. But people that talk about that, all I can say is you have a guy that does it the way you need him to do it
to win
games. In this league, the teams that are advancing, the teams that are winning, have quarterbacks that have low interception rates outside of Big Ben, who's found, they've found
ways to get
that, and high yards per attempt, best towards the best in the league. That's what Andy Dalton has been the last 2 years, and I think that's something that you can be excited about if you're a Bengals fan and you're looking at what to take out of the teams that are there this weekend. You can also say Andy Dalton is not Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers. You know, I mean, that's also the difference. And you could have said the same thing about Dak Prescott if Dallas would have ended up winning that game and Rodgers didn't have the miracle throw catch to Jared Cook.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott was up in the top three in that stat as well.
Yeah. So, kind of going back to what you were saying, yeah, the offense definitely does remind me of that because you got kind of like that dual threat, you know, backfield. You've got the clear number one receiver. And yeah, it is. It's about, I mean, it is pushing the ball down the field. I mean, I know there's a catch and run aspect to some of that stuff too, but it's just, I mean, to get 9 yards an attempt like Matt Ryan does, I mean, that's, you know, you're making a concerted effort, to cover a lot of space in the air. And it's just, you know, I think Taylor Gabriel has a lot to do with that. I mean, he's probably the biggest, I mean, him and Mo Sanu. I mean, Taylor Gabriel kind of fell into their. I mean,
they spread it around. So
that's
the thing is they do such a good job of getting everybody involved. And that's what something – Jay Gruden was really good. He cared a lot about that as a coordinator and has now as a head coach. That's why Kirk Cousins has been up in that stat. I mean, you can't – it was one of the biggest problems with the Bengals offense this year, and it was part of circumstance. You can't fixate on one guy. All the offenses that are the most efficient passing the ball, spread it around to everybody and don't focus. It's nothing wrong with having that guy, a.k.a. Julio.
Right.
But you got to spread it around to everybody else. You can't get fixated and focused on one guy. You can't be efficient that way. And we've seen that out of these – I mean, every single team that's there this weekend has done a pretty good job. What made Pittsburgh – what helped Pittsburgh's offense take – not obviously getting Le'Veon Bell, but when Eli Rogers And all these other guys for them started getting involved offensively in the passing game is really what helped take them to the next level too. I mean, and that's apparent to everybody else. It's not a secret, but when you look at the thread and how you can connect it to the Bengals, I think you see the possibility of efficiency and them needing to be more than just AJ Green. I think they're hopeful that next year they will be more than AJ Green.
Yeah, and part of that will be the, I know in their minds, a healthy Tyler Eifert. You know, Tyler Boyd will be better. But to your point, I mean, Julio Jones, he did miss two games, but 83 receptions, that's his fewest, you know, in a full season. You know, he missed a bunch of games back in 13. That's his fewest since 2012.
Yep.
You know, and there's a reason for that. I mean, it's just, you're right. Now, the targets were still there, but that's kind of like AJ a year ago. And then you saw it kind of flip back the other way this year when, you know, CJ Uzomah and Tyler Kroft really weren't much of anything to speak of, and Tyler Boyd really didn't kind of catch fire until late in the year. So,
you know what else happened in 2012 for the Falcons? It was the other time that they were in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it says a lot, about that and that point of view, and I think while Ken Zampezi is going to have to be better at manufacturing points in 2017, again, I still think that's why the overall offensive concept is why he's still here. You know what I mean? Like I guess it's I think you could see. I think when they look at their team, we're going to get into some personnel changes we think they should make this offseason or should handle. But, you know, the coaching staff's coming back, and I think that's one of the reasons why. I think Marvin Lewis and, to an extent, Andy Dalton feel that that's a strong suit of theirs, or can be again, you know. And it was, and honestly, Paul, it kind of was. I mean, you're right, until AJ was no longer in the picture, I mean, Andy's yards per attempt that didn't totally fall off the table.
No. It was the second highest of his career for the season, including the struggles he had. I mean, it coming down in the back half of the season.
Exactly.
It was still the second highest of his career, down about a little over a yard from last year when he was up towards the top of the league. There's a lot that goes into that, but he didn't take some massive step back. In my opinion, when you consider having to play without AJ Green and with a bunch of rookies for the majority of the back half of the season, let's move on, because at some point we have to move on and talk about. We wrote our story for the website, and it was in Sunday's paper. If you pick that up on. I'm surprised. Have you been getting the emails for GM jobs? Has anybody reached out? Have the 49ers reached out to you or anybody about us coming in as a joint team to just take over as GM somewhere?
No. So I had to sort of make it clear again that, you know, I could have told Houston to not give Brock Osweiler $72 million or whatever. After that's watching him play, I mean,
have you checked your spam folder? Maybe it's in there.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I would have not done that alone makes me better than one general manager in the league. So,
yeah.
So, look,
you've already won up.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But no, I haven't. But maybe it's getting lost in my flood of AJ McCarron guy tweets and emails.
Well, I at the very least, I'm guessing in the next week or so, Duke Tobin will ask us to come in and just help out on his staff as consultants.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so.
I think we've proved ourselves. But, they probably don't need to hire us when they can just get the information for free with an Inquirer subscription.
Right. That is true. I bet you that's what they do.
We need to know what they need to do to run their own team.
Well, we do know they get the paper there.
They do. So it does get delivered.
Yeah.
There's one thing I can tell you. It's that Mike is going to continue to get the paper.
Sure. That is true.
Do you think we have to ask our delivery people? Do you think they toss one up to like gate 3 and it's in front of the gate? Does someone takes it up to him on weekday mornings up to his office, or do you think it gets a direct to the office in the mailbox inside? I like the idea of someone just tossing one in front of Paul Brown Stadium and just letting it slide up there under the gate.
Well, I think that happens. But I think Mike gets his first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
does he go to a newsstand?
Yeah, well, he might get it right off the truck. Because didn't Marvin tell us on Beyond the Stripes he's there at like 4 in the morning or something like that?
Yeah, he beats him in there. He beats him in there most days, yeah, no doubt. All right, well, so they know. So the Bengals already know this. In case you didn't read it, or so you can, first of all, obviously you can go on Cincinnati.com. You can pick up the paper from Sunday and run through our personnel moves. It's personnel specific that the Bengals need to make this offseason, in our opinion, to sort of get things straight. And it kind of runs the gamut, covers a lot of stuff. I'm not going to get too much into free agents.
Yeah, we kind of hit on that.
We hit on that a lot last week. If you want to know more about that, go back and listen to last week's BBP. So let's start. Number one we had was sign a kicker in free agency. And we kind of went into, you know, there's a few different – some guys that are out there, Greg Zuerlein from the Rams, Robbie Gould, who spent time with the Giants, Phil Dawson was with San Francisco, old man Phil Dawson, Steven Hauschka, who's with Seattle, Nick Novak, Houston. Those are guys that are going to be free agents this year. And that market, you know, the value of the kicker is on the way up. And teams that had struggles are going to be looking for some. There aren't that many kickers out there that have proven to be very consistent on both PATs and field goals, and obviously the Bengals need one. Go ahead and ask the Bucks how drafting one in the second round worked out for them.
Yeah,
you know, there's no guarantees on anybody that you were to pull out of the draft or as an undrafted free agent. To me, the best way to assure that you fix this problem and be done with it, go out there, give a raise to one of those guys I just mentioned. Whether it's Gold or Zuerlein, I would have no problem with giving some money to old man Phil Dawson, even though he's 41. He's been consistent. You know, he doesn't miss very often. He still can hit from pretty deep. I just think it seems to me to be an easy fix. There's only so many teams that are looking for kickers. You're not going to end up in some massive bidding war over to get one of those guys.
Right. Yeah, I mean, obviously, they have to. I think for me, if you're going to look for a guy, I think you got to find someone who has range. And you mentioned Dawson, and it is interesting. I mean, they still, you know, trot him out there from 50-plus. I think, you know, 49er weather and being out there, it's been a while since he's kicked in some bad weather. You know, 14 of 20.
Cleveland forever.
Yeah. That just... 2012 was the last year. So I guess for me, if I'm going to look for someone, it's going to be someone who can give you points when you can line them up from 50-plus. Because I just, you know, for all the issues with Mike Nugent, I think the biggest one I had was that you couldn't trust him or you couldn't even think to roll him out there at a certain distance. You know what I mean? Like I think, because to me, I think these guys are all kind of the same. 84% on the field goals, 85%, you know, 98% of the PATs are all kind of the same guy in that regard. So I think to me that I would find someone, you know, who am I comfortable trotting out there to kick from 54 or 53? I don't know. I think that would be, if I'm looking for somebody Phil Dawson's made those kicks of late at 41. But I think any of those guys who you feel confident can make some of those, to me, would I guess be the, all right, you're in the right hand and these other guys are over here, I guess. Look, it's all about points. We saw this team really struggle with that, and I think that's something where if your kicker can give you that when you couldn't get that before, I don't know. I just think that would put it over the top for me, I guess.
Yeah, I mean that is where you would look at Zuerlein and love it. He has the biggest leg out of those guys. I mean he's the most powerful. I mean, he's hit from 60-plus twice. I mean, you know, he's good. he's got more than enough leg from deep. He's been wildly inconsistent year to year, which is your biggest concern. Where 1 year, I mean, you know, in 2015, he was 67% from on field goals. Then he comes back to last year and he's 86%, doesn't miss a PAT, and he hit a couple of bombs. He hit 50% of his deep shots. I mean, but then the year before that, in 2014, he was 5 of 7 from 50 plus, including a 56 yarder. And you know, so you just don't, you know, there's some of these guys that all have a little bit of warts.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to take into consideration. Zuerlein would have the biggest leg. I mean, pick your poison. I mean, I would assume that you'll get one of these guys and some sort of competition with an undrafted free agent kicker or a Hawker back in or whatever, in case they're just complete disasters in camp and in preseason and stuff like that.
Right. Well, here, just finally to end that, just to sort of illustrate that, the Bengals only had Mike Nugent attempt 13 field goal attempts of 50-plus over the last 4 years. He only made 5. Look, 50 yards is hard. I'm not saying everyone can do it, but I'm like, if you have your pick, I guess that's what we're going for here in free agency. Find a guy who can maybe give you that 3 points, you know, like ball, like you, that you see in the division. I'm not going to compare anyone to Justin Tucker, but I mean, you look at even the guy that it took Pittsburgh forever to find. You know, sometimes, you know, you need a guy to make a kick. To win a tilt, sometimes you got to make a kick. Sometimes you got to be from 52.
and you know, over that same span, Zuerlein was wheeled out there 35 times from 50-plus and hit a little over 50%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can find that in a lot of other guys. You know, who that's going to be, I don't know. Like I said, there's only so many teams out there that are going to be trying to drop money on a kicker, and you know,
right,
you'll have to pull them away from the current teams that they're with more than likely, but it can be done if you offer a raise.
Right.
So we'll see how that ends up. I just think that's the way to fix it. Would you really be comfortable going into camp with an undrafted free agent and Randy Bullock and Zach Hawker in camp in a quote competition?
No.
No. And you're right back where you were this year, knowing what the hell's going on at that position. It just seems like something you need to shore up at this point.
Yeah, and now it's a total clean slate.
Yeah, exactly. Just go in, find a guy. Okay, we have re-signed Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. We went in depth into that situation last week. Their offensive line is in big trouble without them. And you probably are going to have to suck it up and pay what needs to be paid there.
Yeah.
If it was us holding the dollars, it is not us holding the dollars. But if it was, it's what we do. So you know, sometimes you got to clear some cap space, and you certainly need to get younger on defense. That's our next one. And so we talked about this when we were asking who could be in their last game at PBS. We talked about Ray Maluga being one of, for sure, in our top three. You know, his snaps were cut down from 57% in 2015 all the way down to, what did he end up at? 30% of snaps this year. And he was at about that 50 plus number in the first half of the season. And they had just sort of had enough of him not making enough plays, and the league is changing. And it's just time to get younger there. I think, you know, it's time for them to move in a different direction. And Maluga, you'd save $3.7 million, no dead money. It seems like an easy tie to sever.
Yeah, I guess the only thing there would be, you know, it's rare for the Bengals to not hold up their end of a contract. People shout and screamed about Leon Hall and Doma Tapeko this year, and I'm sure however many others going back. But you're right. I guess here's the thing, Paul. I guess, you know, Ray had that odd leg injury, what, halfway through the year? You know, it was like listed as a tibia. Like, they listed the bone specifically. But yet he rehabbed and then came back. So you know, this goes back to what we've sort of talked about in these offseason BBPs of the front office needing to take people away from Marvin Lewis. And this is one of those instances. I really think, I mean, you know, Ray, however we can do the postmortem on his career if this does happen, but you're right. Going forward, you don't know what you have at PJ Dawson and Nick Vigil still. And you may draft another linebacker. You're right. I don't think the money has anything to do with it. I mean, obviously it would help to get $3.7 million. Maybe buy a kicker with that. I don't know. But it's just, you're right. I think he has no value on special teams he can't cover. And with teams consistently starting, you know, three wide receivers, it's just, I don't know his role. I don't know the value anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a pretty, I mean, there's a darn good chance they end up with Reuben Foster at Alabama at number 9 too.
Yeah.
And that makes it an even easier transition who would kind of take over Ray's spot. We also, you know, mentioned Dansby, Domantas Peko. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that those guys were not giving enough of what you saw in the past. Dansby 35, Peko 32. We don't look for those guys to be back, and you know, I think that's clearly the right move. You just need to give guys like Billings. I mean, Billings and Vigil could very well be starters on opening day next year.
Right.
It's certainly not out of the question.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I. You know, and it's funny, Paul, because Billings, as the year went on, internally, of course, William Jackson III was like, oh, you know, he could have come back with the debate with Pierman, but of the two, Billings was the one I heard more wistful thinking about from front office people. Now, granted, that's personnel. They love their draft picks. You know, they thought they got a steal on him. You know, I kind of question that because, as we just said, I really don't know where a rookie defensive tackle would have played this year. I think he would have been inactive all season, like Deshaun Williams.
At some point, if he was really playing well in spot duty, I think they would have. I mean, Bernie showed he would have put him in the rotation. I mean, they ended up being pretty devoted to the rotation, considering all the debate about that before the season started.
Yeah. So I guess that's,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that would have truly happened. You know what I mean? So, but you're right, though. I mean, they like him. He's younger. You know, when I talked to him on his way out of Paul Brown Stadium, you know, he said he's been able to kind of that. The thing that maybe the underrated part of this that Will Jackson and Andrew Billings had with this were able to sort of reshape their bodies to the NFL level, because you don't really get to do that when you play. I think people kind of forget that these kids go right from a bowl game to combine training, which is very different from football training, and then they go right into the draft and right into rookie camp. I mean, it's a grind. So both of those guys actually feel real good about where they're at physically going into next year. So I think you have to kind of unleash that kid and just see, can he, I mean, really, next to Geno, you're not asking him to do a whole lot. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah, no, you're right. So we'll see what happens at that spot, but I think certainly you're going to need to get younger. You had another one that we had was about signing a veteran linebacker. We behind the curtain a little bit, we really got into this debate, you and I, a little like about how to approach adding to that room. So if you are going to get rid of Ray Maaluga, you're not going to go and replicate the A.J. Hawk, Carlos Dansby. Right. You're getting a bargain because these are guys on their last legs type of deal. You got to get somebody that is younger and you can more accurately predict what they're going to produce. And so you think you should allocate some cash to go out there and find a veteran linebacker. You swayed me a little bit as we went going. Like I honestly, the more I thought about it, the more I see where you're coming from, and can kind of feel that a little bit, because you can't go into it with Vontaze Burfict, who's only played about half of the snaps, the last 3 years, or half the games the last 3 years. And then what? Vigil, Vinny Ray, PJ Dawson, Marquise Flowers. There's a whole lot of unreliability I just met.
Yeah, that was my train of thought with this. Was clearly the coaches and the personnel side said we need help at linebacker, so they signed those guys. Maybe the draft, you know, helps that, but to me, you know, the draft is after free agency, so we can't even really get into that. So you're right, Paul. Who's under contract? You know, Paul Dawson, who was cut. And then had to, you know, spent most of the year on the practice squad. You know, Nick Vigil, who has his issues in coverage, to be kind. Vontaze Burfict, who is good when he's in there. So to me, Paul, I was just looking at it like, hey, I'm not looking for a star. You know, and I mentioned a Keenan Robinson type in New York. I mean, look, the guy played 3 years in Washington, signed a one-year deal in New York, you know, started 6 games, you know, he's a guy, 70-something tackles, but here's the thing, he's a 27-year-old guy, you know, even a Jarvis Jones is going to be coming out of Pittsburgh, again, does he blow you out of the water? No, but if you're going to spend $2.5 million like they did on Carlos Dansby, I just think you should go with that 26, 27, 28-year-old guy who's got 4 years in the league, plenty of tape, but you also know he just athletically is not going to fall off the cliff that A.J. Hawk and Carlos Dansby did, and now you're stuck. And now you have no other choice but to play him. And, you know, I think there's plenty of those. I just named two, you know, there's a handful. And, again, they're not sexy picks, but I think there's guys who are available for that amount of money. In another year where the cap is going up, that, look, they could start if needed, and then best case scenario, special teams, and they're there when someone gets hurt, because invariably that's what happens at linebacker.
Yeah, and those guys, especially if you get a guy who came off 4 years with the same team and then gets cut, there's a lot to prove there.
Yeah.
Guys with motivation, guys who have now started to bounce around the league and need to learn and are motivated to go out there and make money and make a name for themselves and find a home.
Yeah.
I think you're right in that. All right. So we went into trade AJ McCarron. How much do we need to talk about this?
I think we've ramp up a lot more once we get to league meetings and prior to the drafts. I know we'll touch on it a bunch. I don't know. I just think it's really, Paul, the only debate is whether or not we thought it'd be pre-draft or post-draft. But again, I think people know where we stand on this.
We have really covered this ground.
Yeah.
I don't know for our loyal listeners how many times we need to continue to go over where we think this lands. You know, the idea of the player-for-player trade I think is intriguing. As well, I mean, you talk about where you could really add an effective linebacker there or a pass rusher or something, a guy in their 20s, you know, a player for player trade. You could probably get somebody established that way as well if you're not trying to take a shot at picks and what have you. Let's just move on. So then we talk about mock draft guys going to like this. A little draft talk here. Make a bold draft move. And, you know, So people think, well, make a bold move. The Bengals are going to make a bold move. Mike Brown is going to make a bold move. They're not going to move up and repeat Kajana Carter. Yeah, no. This is more about day two, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, this is about on day two when you're sitting there at 41 and you love a guy that's sitting there at 33 and you know he's probably going to be gone by the time he gets to 41. And you think he could really be the game changer, difference maker for you. Let's just say, I don't know. I'm going to start Christian McCaffrey, Stanford.
Okay.
Probably not going to last to 41, but maybe he's there early in that second round. And you think you could go add Christian McCaffrey, and he could solve your problem at running back. Say Rex Burkhead left or whatever.
Yeah,
combine you're throwing extra four in there, and you know, a four and a six or something. You've got all these picks. You're gonna have 11 picks. Maybe you have an extra one because of McCarron, and you move up and you get that guy that you know can be the difference maker. The way last year, when they sat there at 55, and rather than moving up to attack for Michael Thomas 10 picks ahead, they sat back and waited on Tyler Boyd because they didn't have leverage. They didn't have anything to offer.
Right.
They only had 7 picks. This year you have 11 picks, possibly a quarterback that you could trade for one. You could move up 10 spots. I mean, look at the year that Michael Thomas had. Now, granted, that's in New Orleans. It's like the haven. Right. Or Sterling Shepard. You're talking about a guy that was drafted earlier in the second round. As comparisons to see what we're talking about, I mean, there's a level difference. If you feel like there's a level difference and you can move up, perhaps that's the way to go. Because then you start looking at your roster, and where are all those guys going to go?
Right.
And how criminally young are you all of a sudden going to become if you have 11 picks plus Andrew Billings and William Jackson,
right,
who are going to be in their rookie years, basically, coming off injury, and undrafted guys? All of a sudden now, a quarter of your roster doesn't really have any experience.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm going to throw a name out, and because it's the most recent name, and I think it speaks to what we're talking about, or what I sort of meant by a bold move, and that's Russell Bodine. And while I understand people are like, what? No, you know, Russell Bodine.
Everyone just turned this off. Everyone just turned it off.
But yeah, let's just look. They traded up to get a guy who started day one and has started 48 straight games. This isn't now a referendum on Russ Bodine now, but what it is that's what I think they should do. Trade up to find a starter. Or, you know, in this day and age, you know, with heavy rotations, you know, a guy you could almost count as a starter. I think it needs to happen at number 9 and at somewhere else. And you're right. You're saying day two. At any point, I think just in those first handful of rounds, could be the second round. Move up to the
right
8th spot. I mean, I guess the Browns aren't going to trade any of those picks. Maybe they will because they're weird and trust the process. But, you know, you're sitting in a good spot with a 9th pick in every round. Maybe there is a clear difference to you between, you know, 33 and 41. Kind of like what you were saying. Or maybe it's in that third round.
Yeah.
I think that's what a bold, quote-unquote, move is finding a guy who will start. And then you have two at least, and maybe three with that second round pick, depending on, you know, where you do this at. I just think, you know, you do need an infusion of young players, but I think you need them at the top end and difference makers.
Yeah. No. Positions of need.
Right.
Right, and that's what the Bodine trade was about at that point. They needed a center. And so they thought they saw a guy there. So you come at when you see a position of need and you see a potential fit where a guy could start and there's a drop off afterwards. Make a move. It's just you've already got quantity. I think you've got too much quantity. If there is such a thing. I know Duke Tobin just turned off and threw his Yeah, but there is such a thing when you start looking at the big picture of the roster.
Right.
And what you really need, you need impact guys as much as you needed that quantity. When you start getting into 11, 12 picks, you start wondering where those guys are going to go. And if there's a way to get a little bit more impact in the second or third round and you only have 9 guys that are coming off as rookies, so what? That's still a big-ass draft class.
Right.
You know? I mean, let's
with Billings, I mean, Billings and Jackson to me still count as this. In my opinion, because they never even made it through camp.
Yeah, they were never rookie. On this current 53-man roster, which needs to get better, obviously.
Right.
But you know, that's a lot of rookies that are when you start talking about rookies, okay, yeah, they should just be inactive for the most part. That's a lot of rookies that would be active on game days. Week 1. Much less by week 16 or 17.
Yeah.
So I just, there's nothing wrong with a lot of picks. God knows only a few are going to necessarily make it through, but this team is not going to let go of 4th and 5th round picks. They never have.
Right.
I mean, they're just not going to do it. And when you're looking at, you know, how many picks they're going to have, see, in the first four rounds, they'll have Chishev two extra fours. They could even have so you're looking at six and then possibly a McCarron pick. Maybe there's seven right there in the first four rounds. Right. That's great. Maybe you ditch a couple of the sixes, or maybe you ditch one of those fours, and you move up. And I just think that it's when you look at formatting the 53 man roster,
right?
They could afford to leak a couple of those picks in order to get exactly the guy. Make sure they get exactly the guy they want at a position of need.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and that draft an edge rusher early also in there. I mean, this draft is just. It's ridiculous at edge rusher. There's, I think, Matt Miller, who we really like from Bleacher Report, who's their draft expert, put out his top 300. And, you know, after the bowl games, you're starting to get a feel for how this is going to break down. And this is like, if those 2 years in a row there were the years of the receivers, right? And, yeah. You know, you have certain groups that are just dynamic. Last year was the year of the defensive tackle. This year is the year of the edge rusher.
Yeah,
8 of his top 22 are edge rushers. There's a lot of names. You know, you can take your pick. You know, Myles Garrett might go number one overall at Texas A&M. Jonathan Allen out of Alabama maybe was the best defensive player in football last year. He's a defensive end. Solomon Thomas out of Stanford is in almost everyone's top 10.
Well, who are you going to have the Bengals with in your mock draft?
You know, here's the thing. You look at the Bengals and their history, you know what that guy looks like.
Right.
They look like Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson. They're 6 foot six, 6 foot five, 6 foot seven. They're 270, 80, 90 pounds and with long wingspans. And there's a few of those guys out there. Now, a lot of those guys that fit that actually are probably further back. They're not listed in most of your top tens. I think Derek Barnett out of Tennessee is probably the closest fit to what they normally have, and they love SEC guys. They love guys that produced in the SEC, and Barnett really produced in the SEC. Most people have him around their top 10 or so. You know, I've watched a very little tape on him. I can't claim to be an expert on him at all at this point. I see a guy that takes some plays off, but that's probably something they think they could fix. They thought they could fix that in Carlos Dunlap, and it worked out. Taco Charlton out of Michigan, he's not a guy you would take in the top 10, but maybe if you move back a little bit, you know, who knows how guys will move. He kind of fits 6'5", 270, long wingspan type of guy. There's lots of those guys. There's just so many. You can really kind of take your pick your poison. And maybe you do feel like you like a guy like that. Move back in the first round so you can move up in the second or third round like we talked about.
Right.
If you feel like, you know, well, who knows? But, you know, they need to get an edge rusher in that first or second round. Somebody that can put in there, take some snaps from Michael Johnson, let Michael Johnson mentor because you won't have a better mentor than him.
Right.
And start to develop as a pass rusher. They need a young pass rusher. They haven't gotten enough out of that side. And it's going to be available to them.
Yeah.
In the first couple days, in the first couple rounds.
Then they get Mike Williams, number 9.
You know, and that goes to another one. That goes to the other one in here. Draft a starter.
Yeah, that's really my thing, Paul, because it's – unless you have the number one pick, after that you don't know anything. And anything – and every other team can change your plan based on a trade, you know, jumping in front of you and whatnot. So to me, it is about finding a starter at number 9 because this team, I think it's, while draft and develop is true and you don't go away from that, I think, and play, years of playoff runs have sort of masked the, frankly, spotty drafts over the last 3 years, 13, 14, 15, you know, you need somebody who can come in and play. And of course, you'd want him to be a Pro Bowler and all those good things. But, I mean, you just need a guy who can play and be better than what you had, you know, coming off a bad year at whatever position is available, you know.
They got enough positions of need that right. you got a whole lot of BPA available to you here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not – that's one where at nine I'm not locked into an edge rusher, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you name the position. If it's Mike Williams, you're not going to hear an argument from me. The one where I get into an interesting argument over, and maybe it's one that we could spend an entire podcast on, would be the idea of Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
If you start getting into running back, I mean, look at what Ezekiel Elliott did, and people could say he wouldn't have done that if he didn't play behind that great offensive line. Maybe so. We saw the difference Rex Burkhead made when he came in at the end of the year.
Yeah.
As far as yards per carry. And running backs, so many of them come out of the backgrounds that end up being such good players. That's all true, but there's also something to be said for the dynamic that your offense suddenly has if you have a game breaker like Dalvin Cook or Leonard Fournette can be. I mean, guys that are just freaks. My own personal philosophy is I wouldn't do it. I just believe too much in the running game. A, is not as important, and B, can be established later in the draft. But these guys are good. I mean, Dalvin Cook, I mean, I like him more than Fournette. I think he's incredible. That guy is a game breaker. How much would somebody love to have Le'Veon Bell on their team?
Yeah.
You know?
But
now, granted, Le'Veon Bell was found in the third.
There you go. I mean, I share your sentiment, Paul. I'm not a first-round running back guy. I used to be. And while I... Full disclosure, I voted for Zeke Elliott as league MVP in the PFWAs. I do think he was drafted that high because Dallas knew what they had in front of him. I don't know if he's – I truly believe that. I don't know if he has that sort of impact on this league if he goes anywhere else. And you look at we could spend a whole podcast on this, even with the unevenness of Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon, and why you've seen the flashes from them, why they were top 10 or 15 picks back in 15. You know, I'd still argue that they reached on those guys. Running back, I don't think you'd ever convince me about a first round running back ever again, to be honest. But.
I'd probably be with you on that. But receiver, you could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ruben Foster at linebacker. Yeah. Mike Williams at receiver. Any of those defensive ends that are going to be listed in the top 10. And you know what? One of those guys are going to be there. Because guess what? There's a whole lot of QB needy teams in the top 8.
Yep.
That are probably going to take some flyers on whether it's, you know, Foster or Trubisky or any of these guys, Kaiser, everyone's going to reach for quarterbacks. They always do, even in a year where it's not supposedly the best. So somebody's going to be there of these guys that we're mentioning. And I think you can, when you get to a top 5, top 10 player, this team especially is going to, for the most part, throw position out the window. The one position that I'm curious about, you've got a couple of safeties up there that, you know, when you talk about really good safeties, whether it's Jamal Adams, Jabril Peppers is kind of a guy, no one really knows what he's going to be in the next right. level. Hooker from Ohio State. That might be a position they probably would not have in their top 10 just because Iloka and Williams are both signed to long-term deals.
Right.
And they kind of like what they've seen as far as backup roles from Daron Smith. I mean,
yeah.
they're not gonna get rid of Sean Williams and George Iloco. They just signed him.
No. Yeah.
So my point being, maybe that would be a position that would probably be off their board as far as matching up guys right. to who would be available. But the rest of them, somebody's gonna be there.
Corner.
And the main point that what we wrote about and said, and that needs to be said again, that guy needs to play week one, starter, period. I don't care what position it is. If it's a running back, if it's a receiver, if it's Foster at linebacker, if it's one of these defensive ends. If he's not starting, he's in every third down on as a pass right. rusher. That guy has to be playing, period. None of this. When you got a guy in the top 10, it's enough of this red shirt stuff.
Yeah, not with that guy.
Not with that guy. You can't do it.
So that means you were having to pick a corner when you're mock drafted number 9 then? Is that what you're saying? No. Oh, wait, no. Just okay.
Stop. Don't do it. You want to – too early in the offseason for you to be doing this.
No, I don't.
Sending me down this bad road, put me in a bad place.
Oh.
This team drafts corner. I won't even know what to say. Outside, I will have a couple of questions in the press conference.
Yeah, you will. Yeah.
But we'll see, we'll see how it all plays out over the course of free agency. That goes into our last one, which we kind of talked about, is replenishing at running back. We've gone into the Rex Burkhead situation. Whether it's Rex Burkhead, whether it's drafting a running back, they need to do something there. I mean, you could probably, if they get Rex Burkhead back, find a way to work out a deal. That would be great. He comes back. There's probably an assumption that's been given him that he's going to be playing more often. So they need to replenish it, whether with him or whether spending a pick in the first four rounds on a running back that can come in and play fairly immediately. That also needs to be part of the plan. And so there it is. We solved all the Bengals problems.
Yeah. 14-2.
14-2. And in week 10, they induct their first four people into the Ring of Honor. That's it. We've solved every single problem. All right. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I guess, and we touched on it earlier when you kind of showed us why you were mad earlier, but why are you mad this week?
Look, we obviously, our job is to cover football. We cover the Bengals, and I think we do a good job of this. I know I try definitely to stay away from officiating being part of my coverage. I just think penalties, it's what happens. I mean, obviously, sometimes you can't ignore it. Like, four straight penalties against the Steelers, allowing them a field goal, or the way the wild card game ended. But I guess, now that I've been watching some of these playoff games, I don't know. I'm mad at the league in the way that they've put so much of the game in the officials' hands. And I guess I can say this now because I don't have to cover one of these teams that's doing this stuff. I guess they miss things that are obvious, coaches on the field, or they'll throw flags we're talking about the Seattle game. Paul, they could call hold on every play. And I think just sometimes I do feel it's a judgment call when they're like, do I throw this holding or nah, this hold isn't as bad as that other hold I saw. And this whole, you know what I mean? Like, I guess there's too much of it. And like when I'm watching Dallas and Green Bay and it's the ball's in the air and I'm not even looking to see if the guy catches it. I'm looking to see, if there's a, there's the PI. Okay. There's no answer to it. This is, I guess, the one time I feel I can kind of be a fan, if you will, because I haven't been, because we don't, I don't know about you, but I don't really watch football, I guess, like fans do. We can't. So I guess I allowed myself to do that for the first time in a while. Yeah. And I was just like, come on. You know what I mean? It was just, look, I'm not saying they're not penalties, because invariably, a lot of times they are. And I don't think there's an answer. Maybe it's a full-time official thing. Maybe that is the answer where, I don't know. But it just upset me that it was like these very important games are, and I know every game's important, but you know what I mean. It's just, it was like, oh. We're watching this again. We're watching that guy again.
Now, how do you fix it? I mean, what do you?
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you call less?
I guess it's, I don't know. And maybe we do get one shot at officials, you know, before the start of every year. Maybe down at the Super Bowl, you'll have access to some of the stuff. Maybe it'll come up, the full-time official thing. I don't know. Maybe that's it. I don't know what the answer is, but it just seems like the game, and this goes to me, to the NBA as well, the game's sort of taken away from the players in a lot of ways. And I don't know what that answer is. It just made me mad, Paul. It just upset me.
I don't understand. You know what makes me mad is when a guy literally had his jersey ripped underneath his shoulder pads and couldn't even get a call. I mean, it's like he didn't do that himself. I mean, it's just when stuff gets missed, like ripping on jerseys
or headshots,
tackling a guy while face guarding in the end zone. You know, and you're right. It's increasingly harder for these referees to make calls, but it's like there should be a certain level where these things you can't just keep missing. You can't miss those. They change too much, and especially when you get into the PI game where it's 40-yard penalties.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Paul. I guess for me, and I know these were two different games, but why don't you when one guy's job is to make sure Cam Newton doesn't get hit in the head? Yet somehow Cam Newton gets hit in the head. How and that's going to happen. You can't like prevent it from happening, but you can make sure that the calls are made and the penalties are applied. How about really dialing in on those kind of things and then maybe holding and all of this other stuff and some of these other kind of hand fighting. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I just think sometimes and I know Bengals fans might listen to this and be like, oh, that week two game at Pittsburgh, look at all the holding and Ben and all. Look, I get it. You know what I mean? The Bengals didn't get called for holds either. So I guess for me, it's like, I don't know, points of emphasis maybe need to be reimagined. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, maybe get really good at some other things and then, you know, if the edge rusher is horse collared on his way to the quarterback, it's like, okay, there it is. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I think you know, it's been broken, and I don't know what's been made to fix it other than more rules and more penalties and more, you know, that just make it harder, I think. So that's what made me mad. My football watching was hindered because I was angry.
How many things in your life are hindered because you were angry?
Many, actually. Many.
My dinner was hindered because I was angry.
Yeah.
My drive to the mall was hindered because I was angry.
Yeah. That's true.
It's more a you problem than an NFL problem, possibly.
I will refuse to admit that, always.
This podcast has been hindered because I'm angry. Oh man. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. I guess we need to go out with a song. I think you know, what do you think about so we basically fixed the Bengals problems here, didn't we?
We did.
So,
are you saying we're men at work? No. Oh, sorry. I thought that's maybe where you're going.
I'm not. I'm not against men at work. I mean, necessarily.
I'm just curious.
So I don't really know how we can correlate their song, but it's really the only song that I really recognize by them.
So, well, where were you going with it? Sorry.
I was just going to try to find a song about fixing things.
Okay.
So, I don't really have one. But I know that there are some. So, I was going to try to figure one out.
Well, here's the thing, Paul. Who can it be now? What can it be? Men at work, they want to know. Who is it? Who can it be? So So while you go worry about, you know, fixing things, I don't know.
Men at Work.
I'll listen. I'm wondering who it is. That's all.
All right. That's fine. Since we're Men at Work, that's what we'll go with. So, everyone, enjoy this song, because I couldn't think. If you have any good songs about fixing things, let us know what we missed out on this week and instead went with Men at Work. So, all right. Again, so next week's BBP, you will be in Mobile, Alabama.
I will.
So we will catch people up from the Senior Bowl. And stuff that's going on down there, catching up with coaches and all that type of stuff. And the week after that, I will be in Houston for the Super Bowl. So we'll catch up on all the NFL league information going on down there, which will be aplenty. So we'll keep you up with all that. And if you have any questions, stuff that you want us to answer on the BBP, just shout out to us on Twitter at Paul Danner Jr., at Jim Osarski, with a hashtag BBP. And we'll try to get to as many questions of yours as we can. So anyway, thanks for listening. Thank you to Men at Work for showing up and taking us out. And we'll talk to you next week on the BBP.
It's not the future that I can see. It's just my fantasy.